Welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf, the show that lifts the lid on New Zealand's distilling magic. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf, your guide to the flavours, the people and the inspiration behind our top local spirits. We'll hear what drives these distillers to create their signature blends and maybe discover a new favourite along the way. So whether you're a gin lover or a whiskey wizard, join us on the ride and always keep it classy and drink responsibly.
Kia ora and welcome to Tales from the Top Shelf. I'm your host, Susie Carrick. We're heading to the rugged, sun-soaked hills of central Otago to a distillery that proves you don't need a big factory or a long legacy to make something truly special. Prophecy Distilling is based out of Ernklugut near Alexandra. Their story starts not in a polished facility, but in a kitchen. A few curious minds and eventually a couple of shipping containers affectionately known as the Gin Tin. In their first year, they've already turned heads, picking up medals for both their gin and vodka and taking out New Zealand Spirit Awards Emerging Product Award, not long after launching. It's a story of eight friends, foraged botanicals, and what they call crafting miracles from not a lot. And joining me today is Georgia from Prophecy Distilling. Welcome, Georgia.
Hi, Susie. It's so good to see you again.
Lovely to see you too. Thank you for joining me. Right, now, there are eight of you behind Prophecy Distilling, which is quite unique in any business. What kind of experience and skills does each of them bring to the table, and how has that shaped the distillery?
Yeah, so Prophecy is made up of four couples, and we're a mix of siblings, friends, and partners. So yeah, there are eight of us, but as we're all doing this project in our spare time, sometimes eight still doesn't feel like quite enough. We've got a real kind of broad mix of skills amongst us. So I'll take you through the crew. So Tom, who is my brother-in-law, he's a farmer, and he knows a lot about the land that we're on, and he's a really keen hunter-gatherer. So he knows a lot about plants in the area and what grows when. Barry, who's also part of the crew, is a plumber. So he was really quite integral in pulling our still set up together and did a lot of work on the containers. Barry's wife, Lexi, has a background in quantity surveying and health and safety, which very much comes in handy. Yes. Lexi and Barry are also business owners in their own right. So it's been really good to have them, as they kind of know how to make the numbers stack up, which turns out quite important. My sister Anna and my sister-in-law Jamie are both school teachers, so they're really good at cracking the whip and bringing events to life and just generally getting things done. My brother Matt, he is a quarry manager, so he's very knowledgeable with explosives and health and safety, so he's really good for dealing with highly flammable liquids and making sure we're not blowing ourselves up in the distilling process. And I have a background in environmental science, so I know a few things about water and resource consents and things like that. And then my partner Thomas did many years as a barman, so he knows a thing or two about making a drink. So we've kind of got no real huge amount of distilling prowess amongst us, that we're kind of completely self-taught in that respect. Our kind of skill sets and day jobs have all kind of weirdly been really useful to starting a distillery.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you've got all the bases covered between all of you. So, because there's always, that's one of the things, there's so many areas. So, well done on that. Okay, so let's go back to the very beginning. This all started as a bit of a kitchen experiment amongst you all. Mm-hmm. What sparked that first moment that made you go, let's give this a go?
Yeah, so it probably all really started about 5 years or so ago when Anna, Tom, Lexi and Barry and a few of their mates were on holiday in Melbourne and they visited a big distillery over there and did kind of, you know, a distillery tour and they really loved it. Like they loved learning about the process and sampling spirits, obviously. And they just kind of thought, oh, wow, this would be a really cool thing to try out and kind of do as a group of mates. So from there, they purchased a little three-liter still and started kind of tinkering around and having a play together. But yeah, when it came to the idea of actually kind of starting a proper distillery, my sister Anna thought she'd better get her siblings involved. So she asked our brother Matt and I if we were keen to join. And of course, we brought our partners into the mix. I think we were all just really excited about kind of doing a new project, but also doing something together as a family and friends. Yeah, and so from there, we just started having semi-regular meetings of tinkering around with our wee still and sort of scheming up a plan of how we'd get this thing off the ground. So it took us around probably from that decision of, yep, we're actually going to do this. We're going to build a real distillery. It probably took us about 2 years from there to the launch date. So yeah, the name Prophecy has kind of a couple of meanings. The first comes from Prophet's Rock, which is a landmark rock that's up on the horizon behind the distillery. And the second kind of speaks to that sort of prophecy and vision for our future, so something for our friends and family to enjoy as we grow. But yeah, so it's very much kind of like a passion project from the start. And yeah, really just a way of doing something together that's fun, but also that we could kind of potentially grow into a livelihood as well. And yeah, just always a good excuse as well to hang out with your family and friends and have a drink.
Absolutely. Now, I love that you've built a lot of this, obviously, yourself and with that whole number eight wire mentality. From your research to setting up the distillery, what were some of the biggest learning curves you had along the way?
Yeah, so the distillery... yeah, when we say it's been like built by us, it really has been built by us and a lot of friends that we've called on favors to along the way. So when it came on to, you know, building the distillery, we called on mates that had trucks and mates that were sparkies and mates that had a spare sliding door that we could, you know, cut into the side of the distillery wall, mates that could do site plans, things like that. So yeah, we've also kind of found lots of bits and bobs secondhand, like stainless steel benches and things on Trade Me. So, yeah, we kind of, if we couldn't do it ourselves, we knew a guy that knew a guy, and it's been a real family effort, and we've done it all on a shoestring, really. It's all been funded out of our own pockets, so we don't have any kind of big fancy investors, unfortunately. yeah, with kind of, I guess, building your own distillery, there's lots of ups and downs. And there was, I think, lots of learnings too with all of the regulatory stuff and, you know, dealing with customs and doing our excise tax, like that kind of paperwork was all completely new to us, being new to the industry. So there was a few learnings there, but I think probably the main learning curve for our crew has been learning the distilling process itself and getting to know how to make our gear do what we want it to do. Distilling is really like a balance of an art and a science. So yeah, there's so much to know and there's a lot of things that can trip you up in the early phases of learning. But there's also so many things you can kind of do to improve the process, and that's been really cool for us all to learn. I think just for me personally as well, I've really loved getting to know what it takes to run a business. And it's been such like a privilege to be working with Lexi and Barry, who are already business owners, and they have that knowledge already. So we're also, from the skills that we have, we're kind of teaching each other things as well, which is really cool too.
That is very cool. Now, And then you've got your gin tin, which is two shipping containers in the central Otago landscape. I can imagine it'd be a stunning, stunning place to work. Really, what does that space mean to you now?
Yeah, so there were a few reasons for the shipping containers. I guess main one was that they were kind of a cheap way for us to house a distillery to get started. But we also wanted something that would have a pretty low impact on the landscape and that we could pick up and move fairly easily if we ever wanted to do that down the track. It's also just like practically really good to just be able to shut it all up and close everything off once we've finished distilling. But yeah, the distillery is in a pretty cool location. So it's up in the hills in Earnscliw. And we're kind of surrounded by schist and tussock and thyme, and it's out of the way and it's pretty picturesque. So yeah, I think because of that, we often get asked if we have a cellar door or if we do tours. And we're definitely a long way away from that. Like when we say it's a distillery and a shipping container, like that's it. It's a pretty small setup, but it does exactly what we need it to do for right now. So yeah, it's kind of like it's a small, humble setup, but yeah, in the location that we're in, like on a really hot day, if you've got the doors open and you got your tunes on and you're distilling away, it's a pretty cool place to hang out. It is very cold in winter, but the summers make up for it. And yeah, with six of the crew being parents, I know that they don't mind kind of sneaking away for a couple of quiet hours tinkering away in the gin tin.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be a little happy place away from the children. Now, your spirits do really lean into a sense of place with forage botanicals like speargrass, horopito, and red clover. How did you go about discovering and refining those flavors?
So, yeah, when we started Prophecy, we always knew that we were going to use botanicals from around us and use our own water from our own water source. So our ethos is crafting miracles from not a lot, as you said. And yeah, we wanted to really make something special out of what we had to hand. So yeah, as I said, Tom is a farmer in the area and he has a really good understanding of the landscape and what grows where and when it does. Mm-hmm. So we've really got access to a whole lot of different things that grow around us. But it's really important to not just throw in a botanical because it happens to grow nearby, you know, like it has to have a reason for being there and it really has to bring something to the table. So we've selected the botanicals that we do use for a balanced flavor profile. So we've got red clover in there for sweetness, speargrass root, which is kind of quite an unusual botanical we use. It has kind of like an earthy sweet flavor, horopito for heat, and then horehound, which is kind of a pest plant that grows in the area. It's lots of farmers find it really annoying. It has kind of like a green herbaceous kind of flavor, among a few other things. But yeah, we've definitely like experimented with other botanicals in the area that we could use. Like thyme is an obvious choice for central Otago. It grows everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere around us. But we didn't include it in our finder's gin because it was just too overpowering. Like whenever we used it, all you could taste was thyme, really. We just couldn't get it to work. Another one we wanted to try and use or we've experimented with is gorse flower. Gorse flower has like a really beautiful, delicate flavor, but it's obviously really not very fun to pick. that process takes... it was just going to be too labor intensive. So we had to leave that one as well. So yeah, so we're looking for the right flavors, but we've also got to consider things like seasonality and how much labor is involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Now you've described your gin as your story in the bottle. When someone takes that first sip, what do you hope they'll taste or even feel?
I think we just want people to feel a bit of the fun that we're having. I know personally I enjoy a product so much more when I know the producer and their story and know that you're supporting their small business as opposed to, say, grabbing something from the supermarket. And we want to give that people that kind of experience. We want them to feel like we're their mates and we've, you know, created this special product for them to enjoy, and that just for them to know that we had a really good time while we were doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, with those unusual botanicals like the speargrass root, that I don't think anyone else is using that. As a botanical. So that's really cool. Right. Now, for any distiller, what goes into the bottle is only half the story. The second part is deciding on the bottle and the label itself. Can you tell us about your bottle and what the process was that you went through to decide on the bottle that you've got now?
Yeah, so for those listening that haven't seen our bottle before, it's quite unique. We use dark flint champagne bottles, and for our Finders gin, we have bright yellow labels, and for our Omeo vodka, we have a bright blue label. The bottle choice was completely intentional. Our designer, who's also family, we like to keep things in house. He's married to a cousin, but he was really brave and kind of came up with the bottle concept. And he, our whole vision from the start is that, you know, when people walk into a liquor store, they either grab the spirit that they, you know, is their old favorite, or they're looking at a shelf of hundreds. So how do they, you know, how do they choose what they're going to try next? So we knew that we had to choose a bottle that was kind of completely stood out. And we wanted to do something that was just kind of away from a traditional spirits bottle. Like, a lot of traditional spirits bottle were kind of clean whites or blues or minimalist kind of look. And we wanted to do something that was more kind of contemporary and design forward. And we're all youngish in our 30s and 40s, and we wanted to make something that, yeah, we would grab off the shelf and that our friends would want to grab. The champagne bottle too is also a nice little nod to the winemaking, Central Otago winemaking region that we're in. But yeah, the bottle is really unique, and we've had mixed feedback on it. People either love it or people hate it. But we're okay with that, because, like, we know that it's standing out on the shelf, and you can't really argue with that.
No, exactly. And you're right, it does. It stands out, and it does look different and inviting. Now, you launched, and within months you were winning medals and taking out the Emerging Product of the Year at the New Zealand Spirit Awards. What did that recognition mean for you as a brand new distillery?
It was huge. So, yeah, when you're launching into, probably say, like, a pretty saturated spirits market now in New Zealand, it's hard to get people, you know, when they're laying out $70, $80, $90 for a bottle of spirits and they've never tried it before and it's completely new, it's quite a big ask to get people to try something or to buy something if they've never tried it before. So winning medals for both of our spirits and the Emerging Product Award for our Finders Gin gave us that, like, instant legitimacy. And having that very soon after launching means that, you know, we've got the medal sticker on our bottles and people go, oh, okay, these guys are legit. Like, this is a good product. It also kind of gave us that instant, like, industry feedback as well that we needed. Because, you know, obviously all of our mates had been lovely and said that it tasted good and was amazing, but we kind of needed the people who knew what they were talking about to tell us that as well. Attending the Spirits Awards was also amazing, to meet people in the industry like yourself, Susie. And we were kind of, yeah, when we came home from that night, we were kind of blown away and sort of continued to be blown away by how friendly and encouraging everyone is in the New Zealand spirits industry. Like, there's definitely kind of a sense that New Zealand distillers feel like they need to help each other out and learn from each other to keep that kind of standard of our spirits really high, rather than sort of like competing against each other. And that vibe has just been so refreshing and encouraging for us to come into. Richard Wilson from Sandy Mount Distillery, who's down the road in Dunedin, he's been like a particularly good friend for us to have. He really kind of has taken us under his wing and been a bit of a mentor and taught us a lot about the industry. So that's just been like amazing. From the awards, we also met Shana Evans, who's the brains behind New Zealand Gin Day, where a group of distilleries come together with a signature botanical to create a unique souvenir gin each year. So we were invited to be part of the 2026 Gin Day Gin, which was a really fun process to be part of. So yeah, the awards have been really good for recognition of our own product, but just, yeah, mainly so good for connecting to other people in the industry as well.
Gave you some street credibility, eh?
Absolutely.
Now that you're a year down the track, if there was one thing that you could go back and tell yourself when you were first starting out, what would it be?
This is, at the risk of sounding a little bit arrogant, I don't know as much we would tell ourselves. I think we've kind of backed our intentions and our plan from the get-go, and we've taken calculated risks and kind of grown into the industry slowly and surely. I can't really like think of anything or wish I'd known something earlier. I think we have kind of moved at a pace that suited us in a way in which we've wanted it to. I think if I could, you know, travel back in time and have a chat with us, I'd probably just assure us that we've got something worth sharing and that people actually enjoy our story. I think, because we started out, we're not some big, slick, multi-million dollar operation. I think we kind of felt a bit worried that we weren't coming across as being super slick or super professional. But I think that story has really resonated with people. People loved the fact that we're just a few mates having a go and kind of willing to put ourselves out there. I think knowing back then, if we knew that people were going to be interested in our story, I think that would just be really good assurance for us.
Absolutely. Now, you've talked about having big dreams, but also wanting to stay true to what makes Prophecy so special. Mm-hmm. What does the future look like from here then?
Yeah, we started out with the ethos of crafting miracles from not a lot, and that was mainly out of necessity. But as I said, Prophecy started completely out of our own pockets, and we do essentially everything ourselves. We're not a flash operation, and we are completely upfront about that. But even as we grow and get bigger, I think that ethos is still going to stay the same. I think it's just the way that we like to do things. And we've found that that approach really resonates with people. We've got a great community of people here in Central Otago that really back us, and I think really love that approach. So at the moment, with all three of us having day jobs, and with three of the couples having young kids, we need to be really tactical with where we use our time. So we've just teamed up with Sam Waghorn Wright, who owns Wagon Co. Distribution. So he's helping us expand our sales into the North Island, which is really exciting. And then I think our next goal is to start employing one of us to be able to, up our production and work on growing the business outside of evenings and weekends. So that's kind of the next leap we need to make there. We've been to a few events so far since we've started, and that's been a real highlight for us. We did Arrowtown Gin Fest on Waitangi weekend, and that was just like an absolute hoot. It's really cool to just get in front of your customers that you already know, but also be able to have a yarn that people have never heard of us before, and to just have them there in front of you. And obviously mixing drinks and being part of the party is a whole lot of fun as well. So we're definitely keen to do more events in future. So yeah, we're keen to just kind of try a few out and find the ones that work for us, and then also just think about how we can sharpen things up, like packing in and packing out fast, and just kind of getting better at doing the events thing. And then in terms of what's next for our spirits, we're very intentional about what we make and what we don't make. We're still very young. It's our first birthday in a couple of weeks. So we're not rushing into bringing out new products just because we can. I think it can be really tempting to just, you know, distill away and boom, bring out new thing. We feel like people are still getting to know us and still getting to know our gin and our vodka. So we're not rushing into the next thing. When we do, it will need to make sense for where we are and fit with our ethos and obviously fill a gap in the market and be delicious, of course. Mm-hmm. Central Otago is known as a winemaking and a fruit growing region. So there's definitely lots of cool opportunities, I think, to bring those kind of worlds together. We've definitely got some ideas. So watch this space.
Ooh, exciting. Okay, Georgia, it's the end of the working week. You've closed up the gin tin. The sun is dropping behind the hills. What's your go-to drink from your range and how are you enjoying it?
Well, to be honest, Susie, after distilling spirits all day, it's often a beer that's the only drink of choice. If I'm going gin, for me personally, I'm a bit of a purist, so I like to drink my gin with soda so I can taste the gin that I'm drinking. And if I'm feeling really fancy, I might put a slice of lemon or lime in there. If we're doing cocktails, we've done at a few of our events our take on a French 75, which is our finder's gin, champagne, lemon juice, and we've made like a Central Otago thyme syrup to put in there as well, and that is very delicious. So that's probably, if I'm feeling extra fancy, that would be my go-to.
Oh, that does sound very delicious indeed. Right, Georgia, there is something really unique about what you and the team at Prophecy are building. It's hands-on, deeply rooted in place, and clearly driven by passion. From kitchen experiments to national awards all in under a year, that is no small feat. So thank you for joining me today and telling us your story.
Thanks so much for having us. It's been fun.
If you would like to learn about Prophecy Distilling and get your hands on a bottle, head to nzspiritguide.com where you can buy direct. And if you've already tasted Prophecy's range, jump onto nzspiritguide.com and leave a review. I'd love to hear what stood out for you and how it captured a little piece of Central Otago in the glass. That's it for today's episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. Until next time, support local, buy direct, drink responsibly, and keep your top shelf full of stories.
That's a wrap on this episode of Tales from the Top Shelf. We hope you've enjoyed this peek into the craft and creativity behind New Zealand's distilling scene. As always, sip slow, enjoy responsibly, and don't forget to support our incredible local spirit makers. I'm Susie from NZ Top Shelf. Catch you next time for more behind the bar stories.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.